Thank you very much. It's a real pleasure to be here and be listening to a lot of the discussions today. Very interesting. I mean, as you probably know, we do a lot of work on innovation policies at the OECD as well, and we are inspired also by a lot of what happens in this community. So in that sense, I think it's very interesting to be here. And for me, it's always sometimes a privilege to come to a conference like this. I don't always have the time for that, and it's nice to be invited to one. I want to talk a little bit about innovation and inclusive growth. Now, this is a big theme. There are many different dimensions to this, and I've just basically chosen to talk about three different pieces of work which we've done at the OECD, which I think are relevant. They're very different, and I think it shows a little bit that this is still an area where I think we probably need to sort of develop a little bit some of the more frameworks and of how we think about this. I would say that the topic of inclusive growth has really risen on the agenda, and at least in the OECD context. I think particularly since the economic crisis, I think there's been a bit of a reflection on basically what should be the subject of growth, where should we be aiming for. And we've also seen, I think, since the crisis, an enormous growth in inequality in quite a number of OECD countries. And what's happened a little bit is that a lot of people start to say, well, how do we deal with that? And what are some of the things we can do to make have a growth strategy which is more inclusive, which tries to sort of really keep people more in mind and start to develop in that direction? So I'm going to take it from three different perspectives. And the first one is one which is a little different than this community typically focuses on. I think it starts a little bit with the fact, well, and I think you've discussed this a little bit yesterday already, we do have this wide-ranging digital transformation underway at the moment. There is so much happening, which I think we didn't really expect only 5 years ago in terms of the range of technologies that are coming forward, the speed at which they're coming forward, and all the different things that are coming happening. I think artificial intelligence was mentioned a few times today as only one of the things which is happening. At the same time, and I know you talked about this yesterday as well, we basically have slow productivity growth in many countries at the OECD at the moment. We've really seen a slowdown starting before the economic crisis. A lot of countries, basically, it isn't moving as quickly anymore as what was happening before. And the real question is, well, why is this happening? We have all this technology coming our way, and why is it not translating much more quickly into productivity growth? So there is an enormous debate about this, and you have the pessimists and the optimists. The most famous pessimist is probably Robert Gordon, who basically said, well, everything that should have been invented is pretty much invented. It's all very marginal now. Nothing is really happening anymore. You know, what are these new technologies? It doesn't mean anything compared to what we've had in the past. So that's one perspective. Then you have the people who are a little bit more optimistic and say, well, it will come. It will take a little bit of time. It will feed through the system, but we will get there, and we will have this real impact on productivity. And you have people like Erik Bjørnolfsson as one of them, but there are many others. What we've tried to do at the OECD is try to unpack that a little bit, because I think we feel that you need to look a little bit beyond the average. You need to look a little bit beyond this story of aggregate productivity growth slowing down and try to understand what is really happening. And what we found there, and by using firm-level data, and there are two sources I'll point to, this is a very big firm private database we've used of firms across lots of countries. And we basically found there's been this split to some extent in divergence in productivity growth in many cases, where the frontier, the best global firms in the world, large ones and sometimes also smaller ones, are still doing pretty well. They basically still have very high productivity growth. So basically, to some extent, what we're seeing, they're still translating all these new technologies into productivity growth. They're translating all the innovation that is coming forward into productivity growth. A lot of other firms have great difficulties in doing that. So the question is a little bit, why is this happening? What is really happening in looking at this? We've looked at different dimensions of this. I don't want to take you into technicalities. We've also looked at different industries where you, for instance, see that a sector like ICT services, which is where you have some of the more advanced, the bigger firms, the global firms, the ones which we know very well, the big platform firms, they're in ICT services typically. That's where the divergence has been even more strong. So basically there, those sort of the top firms have even more pulled away from the average to some extent. Now, to some extent, this is what you expect. If you're looking at cycles of technology, Often it's only a number of firms that first implement these technologies and innovations. Then it slowly feeds through, it diffuses to other firms, but you do want to see that diffusion happening over time. We also started to look at the national levels because you can use different sources for this. The first bit of work which we did was with a very big global database, millions of firms which were are in it, which we're trying to look at. We've then since done the same work with national data. So the way we do this, we develop a software program with people who have access to firm-level data from statistical offices. We send it to people who have access to the confidential firm-level data. They run it on the data. They send it back to us, and we get data for up to 25 countries or something like that, which we can compare and aggregate across countries. The interesting thing was we found exactly the same. We found there as well that basically you have this divergence, particularly in the services sector, where a lot of firms are pulling away, where basically a lot of firms are not really getting that productivity growth, but we do see it happening in some of the top firms. So if you're looking at these top firms, there is no productivity paradox. They still have very strong productivity growth. It's the other ones that are really lagging behind. And of course, because there are lots of other ones, it means that the aggregate is not really sort of catching up very quickly. We've also found, and this is a slightly more complicated slide, where basically we are looking at the top firms, which is the 90th percentile, we're looking at the 10th percentile, which are the really bottom firms, and we're looking at the 50th percentile, which are the firms in the middle. And the interesting thing is what we see here is that what happened is that it's mainly the bottom firms that are really falling behind. So you have a group of firms that is really not increasing productivity at all. And they're still there. They're still existing in the economy, whereas often what we happen, and I think we heard about Exonovation earlier on, normally you would expect some of these firms to leave the market, to go bankrupt, to move into other sectors, or to really sort of disappear. What's happened, particularly since the economic crisis, a lot of these firms survive. They basically still continue, and that means we're dragging down overall productivity growth. So we're seeing that happening in a lot of OECD countries at the moment where this bottom group of firms is not doing so well. Now, why does this matter for this whole discussion about inclusive growth? Well, the problem is a little bit, if you are a firm that is not able to increase productivity, it's very hard to afford higher wages as well. And I think what we are seeing at the moment is a little bit that more and more this productivity story is also being translated into a wage and an income story. So you have lots of firms that are basically not able to keep up because they're not doing so well in the economy. They're not able to turn some of these new technologies and the innovations that are happening into productivity growth. And that means we have a large group of firms that is really falling behind, and also people working for those firms that have difficulties in catching up. The other thing I want to mention in this context, because we're doing a lot of work at the moment with firm-level data, because it tells us something about the dynamics of the economy. And we think the dynamics of the economy is changing. We're seeing a number of signs in that. We're seeing, for instance, that business dynamism is slowing down. We have fewer firms entering into the economy as startups in many countries. It's really something which we're seeing. We see less churning in the economy, less turnover from firms also disappearing out of the economy. We're seeing signs, for instance, that competition, concentration is increasing in many sectors of the economy, not only in the digital sectors, but in other sectors of the economy. And we're seeing also a big increase in mergers and acquisitions, particularly in digitally intensive sectors. So the dynamics of the economy is changing in the sense that perhaps we're getting less dynamism in some aspects of the economy, which is a bit of a worry, because we've always, I mean, I think also the innovation story is one very much about new firms coming in, startups coming in, new ideas coming in, often through startups, and they sometimes then grow into to other firms. What's happening, particularly at the moment in some of the more digitally intensive sectors, Google bought 300 new startups last year. So you're starting to see that some of these firms are really absorbing ideas very quickly, and there is a question on, will this really have an impact on competition going forward? Will we still see the same innovation coming also from new startups, or will they all become submerged very quickly into to other firms? So I think what we're probably seeing a little bit, and that's when I'll end this part, is to basically say that there's been this trend with a lot of globalization, new technologies coming in, which have had this impact on productivity growth. I think Susanna Boras spoke yesterday about winner takes all. We're seeing that probably in some sectors where there's really happening. And that means that sometimes what the whole process, what we've previously seen of diffusion, adoption of technologies of innovation has become perhaps more difficult. It's perhaps become more difficult in certain sectors that we don't see this diffusion process moving as quickly. I don't think it's about technology often. It's very much about the know-how, how to do things, how to implement process innovation, organizational innovations. These types of things are often the real issue. So there are a couple of things, I think, which we need to worry about from a perspective of looking forward. Also questions like, do some of the firms that are lagging, do they have the managerial talent? Do they have the skills? Do they have the know-how to really implement some of these new things that are happening in the economy? And then finally, of course, there's this link with wages, which we're worried about as well. What's happening as well, that there are things happening in the labor market as well. And in one of the previous sessions, we heard a little bit about that already, where also certain groups in the labor market, if you used to work for a large firm, and if you were a janitor or you were somebody who was doing cleaning in that firm, you were probably still being paid relatively good wages because you worked for a big firm. Now a lot of these things are being outsourced. Now you're working for somebody else, and you're probably going to be paid more according to your productivity. And that, again, means that things are happening in the labor market, which means that often you get these issues. There are labor market policies here that matter. I don't want to go into that, but if you have centralized bargaining systems, that typically means that things are a little bit different. So that's one story, I think, which is perhaps coming from a very different area. It comes from the productivity, business dynamics area, but I think it is relevant for the discussion about innovation. It's relevant for the discussion on innovation and inclusive growth because things are changing, I think, in the economy, but we need to think about how perhaps innovation is feeding through in the economy. The second thing I wanted to perhaps say a few words about and a little briefer is basically trying to look a little bit about what we've done about inclusive innovation so far. So we've been trying to do a little bit of work on policies for inclusive innovation, trying to understand a little bit what are some of the links between innovation and inclusive growth. And I think there probably, we've always probably had a story here that innovation is good for people because basically it creates growth, it creates jobs, it creates new opportunities. It also means that there are sometimes some there are direct benefits. There are also sometimes indirect benefits that people can benefit from. And I think we've seen some of that, for instance, also with the whole digitalization. A couple of examples here. I think, for instance, what we are seeing from particularly sometimes for lower income households is that you can benefit particularly with digital technologies for more access to knowledge and innovation. You've seen certain internet-based services coming forward that can be very helpful for people in terms of education, health services. We also, I think, see that there's sometimes benefits from some of these new platform firms, particularly for people who are on the lower income threshold. And also, I think issues like, for instance, opportunities for micro-entrepreneurs that are coming up in certain cases where they can more easily get into the market, where there is more access to information about certain market opportunities, and also sometimes more access to credit. So there are some opportunities here, I think, that come with some of these new technologies that can be very beneficial for people on the bottom. I will skip the regional side of things, but what we've done there is try to look a little bit across countries and try to see, well, what's happening around this agenda for inclusive innovation. And typically what people look at here are three different dimensions. So you can look at people. You can try to see, well, what can you do about people who are not really involved in the innovation process? And in many cases, that are minorities, they're low-income groups, but also, in many cases, women are not always as much present, of course, in the whole discussion. Very few women are involved in venture capital firms. Very few women create VC-funded firms. So that is an issue where many countries, I think, are looking at the moment. The second thing, I think, is around the industrial dimension, where there is a big focus in many countries, or there's a focus in many countries on SMEs, particularly lagging SMEs, coming back a little bit to my first story, but also about regions. What can you do about more regional development, help some of these regional firms, regions to catch up as well? So that's part, I think, of the discussion in many countries at the moment, to try and sort of do something about some of these more inclusion elements. We've done a little bit of work to try and sort of look at some of these policies. You can find it online. I would, however, say that they're often small policies. They're often small instruments, small efforts, where there is an extra effort being made on to focus on some of these groups, some of these underrepresented groups, sometimes a bit of a focus on some of the more regional policy, of course, does play a role. But some of these things are relatively small, so they're really add-on policies. What I don't think has happened very much yet in the whole thinking about innovation policies, well, should we also think about making some of the existing policies more inclusive? I mean, should we do more and making sure that who is benefiting, looking, trying to understand who are the benefits actually going through? For instance, in work which we're currently doing on R&D tax credits, how easily accessible are they for SMEs? How easily accessible are they, for instance, for startup firms, which are sometimes not making a profit? And in the design of some of these policies, that's something to look at. So I think that's another dimension which is happening at the moment, trying to sort of look at some of these policies, trying to see how we can help them or use innovation policies to develop more inclusive economy, trying to deal and support some of the more broader efforts to reduce inequalities. However, I think we have a bit of a dilemma here as well. I mean, on the one hand, we know from innovation that often it's also something which is highly concentrated. It very much often is about the number of firms, number of universities, a number of players, a number of regions, a number of places that are really moving ahead very quickly. And what is that good? Is it bad? Is it something which is basically just a fact of life? Should we be correcting that? Is that good for innovation overall? I think those are dilemmas which I think we haven't really discussed in that much detail. So obviously, I think you have here something where there are clear winners. There are real firms that are benefiting from all of this. And you see that in going back to the work of Schumpeter and others, that you need to have this sort of drive of innovation. And of course, I think on the income side, this also creates rents. And I think that's one of the things we are seeing at the moment. If you do work for some of these firms that are really benefiting, if you are sort of located in some of these areas where the benefits are really coming to, then there is also, of course, it can contribute to increased inequality in terms of greater income dispersion, that people are being left behind in all of this. On the other hand, I think there are, of course, also benefits of innovation that feed through. I mean, I think we're all benefiting from the fact that we have access to very low-priced, low-cost services in many cases, which, of course, have benefited a number of people directly because of the fact that they work for these companies or they have shares in these companies. But we're all benefiting from that as well. And there are opportunities for social mobility in this discussion as well. So I think we still need to do more work around sort of some of this pros and cons of focusing on innovation as an inclusive strategy, what that actually means in practice, and what that means for the design of policies. I wanted to end with a few words because I think the policy response in all of this, innovation is only part of the whole story for inclusive growth. And I think we've heard that a number of times today in other discussions as well about climate change, about health innovation, about energy innovation. In most cases, I think innovation is part of the instruments that people are looking at. So we have done a lot of work at the OECD since about 2011, 2012 on inclusive growth. There is a new framework which was actually put out last year, which is actually very much around the same dimension. So looking at places, people, and firms, trying to sort of make sure that we invest in people, that we work, sort of really focus on some of these areas. And I just wanted to very quickly show you as the end the different areas. So first one is really about investing in people and places, which is about things like lifelong learning, which we've spoken about for ages and we've talked about all the time, but it's really not something that is in place in most countries at the moment. And actually, last week, the OECD put out a big report on adult learning, which basically shows that a lot of countries have great difficulties still in really moving to adult learning because we don't have the systems, we don't have the resources being committed to it. We don't really provide access to many people. And typically, we train people who are very well trained much more than the people who have very little training. So a lot of the resources are not really going in the right direction. Social mobility, I think, is a real issue in many countries where it's very hard if you grow up on the bottom part of society to actually have the opportunities to move up the income ladder. Issues like health and also housing markets can be really a problem in many cases where it's very hard to move from one part of the other if you happen to be in one where housing is cheap. It's very hard to move to an area where housing is expensive. Regional policies and then also issues around well-being that are important. Second part, and I think this is where the innovation agenda comes in very clearly, about business dynamism, trying to sort of make sure you support some of that entrepreneurial process, some of that innovation process, but also to make sure that we get this diffusion going. And I think this diffusion agenda, it came up a few times in the past few days, is something I think we need to think about a lot more. Labor markets come in here, and so does a few other things. And the final thing I think is here also about government and government itself, making sure that government thinks about inclusiveness as something in their own policy-making process, also in terms of involving people in the policy process, using new data, and also thinking about sort of screening policies for inclusiveness and accountability. There is a lot more on these issues. This is still an area of work where we are doing a lot at the moment. We are actually starting also national reviews. Korea, for instance, has asked for a review of their policies. So this is very much on our mind at the moment. I don't want to take you to all, just do a little bit of advertising. You can find a lot of our work online, obviously. We have a newsletter, if you're interested, and should be one next week coming out, and you can find a lot more on our work on inclusive growth as well on our website. So I've just tried to cover a couple of fields. I think there is so much you can say about inclusive growth. We could have a very long discussion about it. I just wanted to give you a flavor of a couple of things which I think are relevant for the discussion, and hopefully that's been useful. Thank you.